this topic of a sukkah, and a sukkah that has the consideration of the proportion of chamensel. So the Mishnah ends off after having told the din of the height of the sukkah, which is what gave us all of those questions as far as what the reason is, and prompted us to discuss a couple of theories, the Gemara's theories. So now the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us again, Shechamsa Meruba Mitzel Subsula. That if we have a sukkah where the sunlight is more than the shade, so then it's no good. So what does Rashi tell us that attracts so much attention? Right, what does Rashi say? Well, that's what it sounds like, right? Hamuat batel berov. So the minority is negated by the majority. Varehu kamisha eino, and it's as if it doesn't exist. The al shem haschach kriya sukkah, and seemingly I can add on the sukkah. Feel that light is back. All right, so maybe that's there for the video camera. But that's because of the light, because of the schach, that's where the name sukkah comes from. That's where the identity of the sukkah comes from. So the Ran, as you saw, the Ran feels it's very important to clarify what Rashi is really getting at. And how does the Ran add to Rashi? Somebody want to help me out? And what does the Ran say that's... Okay, so you shouldn't get the impression, says the Ran, that some people have, that what we're talking about is the schach itself. Right? The idea that the schach gets nullified by the presence of too much sun, and it's the schach that doesn't exist. No, that's not our point. But rather, it is the shade itself. So it comes around here, v'lo rotzo lomar shaschach hamuat yehe bato legamri b'rov ha-megula. Shouldn't say that the little bit of schach that ends up getting negated by the majority of exposed space. Yehe ki'ilu ein sham schach klal, as if the schach doesn't exist. U'kamo shura'isi mishakasu kein, and there are those who somehow came to that conclusion. Right? Because that's not what it means. And how does he prove that point? Because the Gemara on Daf Chav Beis and Mebeis. What does the Gemara say on Daf Chav Beis and Mebeis? Right, somebody want to help me out with that? What does the Gemara tell us over there? Yeah, Sadi?
For the first of our mission, the implication being that it was equal, with people.
Or just to clarify, the equal statement is where we find two different impressions. So what is the story with equality? We believe in equality. What exactly is going on here? So if it's 50-50 exactly, what's the story? So in that context, what the Gemara makes clear is that there's a difference between what and what? Between the top and the bottom, right? So the top is one thing, but when it gets to the floor, it's going to be a different thing because the light's going to diffuse. So, if that's the right word, light's going to spread out. So therefore, if it's 50-50 downstairs, so then you could assume that it's rov schach upstairs, because the percentage is going to change. So what the Ran is interested in, by calling your attention to that Gemara, is not because you're wondering what's the story about 50-50, but because it makes the point that our interest is not necessarily in assessing what's going on in the schach itself, as much as the impact of the schach, and as much as how that actually affects the situation literally on the ground. Okay? So that's one point that the Ran feels important to emphasize. But the Sfarim point out, for example, the Sfas Emes, you know, the Sfas Emes is the Ger Rebbe. Many of the Rebbes of Ger were tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. The Sfas Emes certainly very notable among them. And the Sfas Emes is perhaps more well known for his thoughts on Chumash and the Parsha and the Machshava that is often quoted from there, but is equally important for his Chidushim on Shas. So he has Chidushim essentially on Moed and Kachin. So the Sfas Emes is often quoted on those Siddharim, and Osapas and those Siddharim, especially Sukkah. We'll see as we go through that the Sfas Emes and his comments on Sukkah are very often referenced. So the Sfas Emes notes here that there's another reason why the Ran feels compelled, or why maybe the Ran feels compelled to say what he says. That there's something problematic about interpreting Rashi the other way. Not just because there's a Gemara that proves his point, but there's something wrong with the concept. Any thoughts what that might be? Yes, sir? Oh, exactly. Right? That the idea that you could have a bittul, right? Let's say, for example, you want to decide you want to try some bacon. So you have a piece of bacon that happens to be sitting in a pile together with three slices of kosher salami, and say, well, I can eat the whole thing because it's bittul. So that is inherently incorrect, right? Because even setting aside the question of not doing that on purpose, let's say it happens to fall out that way, if you can see the Isser with your eyes, it's evident. So then there's no concept of Bittul Baruch. We don't say that the majority always overwhelms the minority. We say that when you have this kind of a Taruvus, when you have this kind of a mixture and you can't figure out what's where, so then you have the right to assume that the majority identity governs. So you could say that the kosher outweighs the non-kosher. So when you have such a thing, okay, fine. But schach, you're going to say that schach, visible pieces of schach, no longer exist because there's more non-schach. Right, it's especially striking because the non-schach here in this case is air. Right? It doesn't even have any presence at all. So for sure, the schach itself is visible. But any way you look at it, you can look at it. Any way you look at it, the schach is clearly visible. So to say that that should be bittul in the halachas of bittul, that's very difficult. So therefore, perhaps the Ran will tell you that it's better to say we're not looking at the schach. And the question is the impact within the sukkah. So there it's a little bit less defined. What's a chatzah of shade and a chatzah of sunlight? So okay, so we can say that there is a mixture of the two, and if the sunlight is too much, that becomes overwhelming, as the vampire said. So perhaps that could be one reason why the Ran is pushed to interpret Rashi in this way, because halachically, Rashi interpreted the other way, the way that he rejects, doesn't seem to hold up. And, as is pointed out, right, this is an idea that emerges also from the Gemara on Daf Tes Amud Beis. Now, what does the Gemara tell us over there on Daf Tes Amud Beis? And there the Gemara talks about a potential bittul situation where you have schach that is kosher, and you also have some problematic schach. Problematic in the sense that it is still attached to a tree. So that, you know, is a problem. Schach has to be not attached to a tree. So you have good schach and bad schach mixed together. And the Gemara says that it's possible for the good schach to overwhelm the bad schach. But there's a condition. B'shechavtan. Right, what's going on over there? Right? Say it again? Right, so you combine them. You have to actively tie down the schach that's part of the tree. You have to mix it in actively with the kosher schach. And here, Rashi himself helps us out by emphasizing what the issue is. B'shechavtan, so Rashi here says, Hishpil Anovav Lamata. Right, so you took these branches and you lowered them, you rav them in Schach Kasher, and you actively have them mixed in with the Schach Kasher. V'ein, what are the key words here? V'ein nirin ba'ayin. So the part of the bad Schach cannot be identified independently. It's not visible. So here, as the Sfas Emes and others point out, see Rashi himself highlights this as a necessary condition. That in order to have bittul, you need to have a situation where the part that you're trying to get rid of, or you're trying to ignore, is not staring you in the face. So in this situation of daftes, the bad schach is all mixed in with the good schach, and you can't see it. And therefore, we have to interpret his comments on that base when he says that the schach disappears because of the sunlight. It's not the schach that disappears. It must be, it is the tzel that disappears. Okay, so far so good. Any questions? Yes, sir?
Can you do that on purpose? Can you pour milk into the challah on purpose?
That's a very good question. In terms of the sukkah, we'll get to it, because this is going to come up. Generally, the answer is no. Right? Generally, when it comes to kosher food, we have a rule called Ein Bevat Venesul Chachila, that bittul is only something that we can take advantage of after it has happened, but you can't decide that I want to take something that's non-kosher and make it kosher by inserting it into a large enough amount of kosher food. That's probably a Nisa D'Rabbanan. Maybe sometimes it's D'Raisa. It's a whole discussion. That is actually one of the major issues in contemporary kashrus and the need for hashgachas in general. Right? The question of, let's say, whether you can rely on the ingredients of a certain product to check if there are any non-kosher ingredients. So there's a certain limit to how big an ingredient, how much of a percentage ingredient can be before it has to be noted on the label. So you could look at the ingredients, let's say, and say, okay, so there's not anything listed here that's not kosher, but what if there is something that's there, but it's too small to be listed? So then, what about the principle of bittul? Will bittul kick in or not? So this is a major discussion, because the argument would be, even if it's bittul, but if it's there on purpose, and if they put it there for a reason, they say, well, okay, but the majority should have bittul, it's not so clear that that works.
That's like a big question when it comes to coffee meat has dairy, some dairy residue.
It's a question of lots of kosher things, all kinds of things. The question is, when something is there on purpose, even if it's a tiny percentage, whether your motive is because you're trying to be mevatel it, or the motive is because it plays a role even in that tiny percentage, so then bittul becomes much harder. So normally, in terms of kosher, it's not so simple. In terms of sukkah, so we'll, God willing, we'll get to it. I think Israel was the first, then Akiva.
When we say that you need more sun than shade, more shade than sun, does that mean that if you have a little bit of sunlight that is punctual growth, or we don't care that there's sun there?
Oh, that's a good question. The whole issue of how you're phrasing it, what exactly is it that we are trying to aim for here, is a very important question, and we'll say more about that in a minute. So we've just been talking from the other side about the schach. What is it that we're interested in about sunlight? So let's try to get to that. Let's try to get to that in a minute. Akiva?
I mean, it could be that we're getting to that also. Just the idea that, is there any, like, nafkamina between saying it's the spot versus the actual shade?
Yes, we are getting to that. That's an important question also to try to keep in mind. So what exactly is going on? Yes, sir.
Sorry. Is it really a pure mixture that you can't... Maybe you can't... It's not nicker whether what's schach and what's tied down, but it's preventable. You can take off... You know what's tied down. So
right.
Is there a real tarobas? I assume tarobas. What's the definition of tarobas?
Oh, okay. So that's also... That's part of the same point, right? To hear everything is identifiable. So what role does that play?
Right.
Which is also tied in, no pun intended, to its reversibility. So let's see a little bit more about this. So one question to ask is, if Rashi is talking about the Sach, does Bittul Barov work? But another question is, does Rashi, even though the language sounds like what it is, does the language really mean to say that we're talking about bittul in the normal sense? Are we talking about bittul barov, like we would talk about in the context of kashrus? Or are we talking about something else? So this is a suggestion that was put forward by Rabbi Shlomo Warman Zecharo Bracha, who's a very wonderful Rebbe and the author of many, many Svarim and Lumdus and the like. And in his later years, he wrote Svarim geared towards Yom Tovim. So he has a Sefer on Sukkos. Very, very worthwhile Sefer, especially because you can read the whole thing online on HebrewBooks.org. So all of the Svarim are there now. They used to be a big commodity. It used to be that these Svarim, there weren't enough printed. And if you got a hold of one of Rabbi Warman's Svarim, it was a big simcha. I remember when I first completed my set of all the Svarim that he had up until that point. But nowadays, they're all, to our great delight, available on HebrewBooks.org. So in the Sefer Oros Chag HaSukkos, he talks about this Rashi. And he asks, is Rashi really talking about Bittul Barov, which the language does admittedly sound like? Or is there another Rov concept that is being invoked here? And sometimes we talk about Bittul Barov, where we allow the majority to be our focus. And sometimes we're talking about one entity, and we use an idea of rubo kakubo, where something is defined by its majority as one thing. So that could be what he's saying here. He's saying that we want to know about this sukkah. What's the story about this sukkah? Is the sukkah considered to be a shaded sukkah? Is it a sukkah with sail? Or is it a sukkah that doesn't have shade? So that answer, perhaps, is defined by the rov. There's perhaps a parallel here. There's a Tosfos in the beginning of Sanhedrin, where Tosfos asks the question. It's a very involved question, so just try to say the main points as quickly as possible. But we know that if we have a Din Torah, so you have three Dayanim on the Din Torah. So there's a vote. It's 2-1. Two say Reuven wins, one says Shimon wins. So Reuven wins. So this Beis Din paskens that Reuven wins. So Tosfos has a question over there about the role of the Miut. How is it different from other minorities in Halacha? And Tosfos has the statement that in that case, the case of the Dayanim, the miyut is kamisha eino. The miyut is as if it doesn't exist. And that's an interesting phrase. And Reb Chaim Brisker has a comment about this that you can find in the stencils, the Kedusha HaGrach al HaShas. It's the second tier Reb Chaim book, not the Reb Chaim and the Rambam, which is the canon, the number one tier Reb Chaim book. Next level over is Reb Chaim on the Kedusha and the stencils. So Reb Chaim explains there's different concepts of rov and halacha. And when you have one entity, we want to know what it is. And it's defined by its majority. That defines the whole thing. So you have a Beis Din. A Beis Din is made up of three dayanim. And the Beis Din takes a vote, 2-1. And it takes a certain position. And that becomes the position of the Beis Din. Right? So this Beis Din voted for Reuven, even though one of the Dayanim voted for Shimon. But he was outvoted, so there's nothing left, so it says, Ki'ilu, he doesn't exist. No offense to him, he does exist. But his opinion has been disregarded in the sense that this Beis Din is now defined by its vote for Reuven. So says Reb Chaim, that's what it means when you have that language there, Ha'amiyut k'misha eino. But it's as if it doesn't exist, which is different than other situations. For example, let's say you have a question where there's a statistical rove. 58% of all people would do things one way, and 42% of people would do things another way. So maybe you have a right to assume it's the 58. You have the right to assume it's the majority. But the 42% still exists. You're out there doing your stuff. You just don't have to worry about that. Here, it's different. The third Dayan is outvoted, the whole Beis Din is defined by that position, Rubo Kakula. Yes. Well, we're not contrasting it yet. This is actually supporting this position. So the difference between his position and... Yeah, we haven't said anybody arguing with anybody. Right? So this is just to support this explanation. So we're just using this to support of a Warman suggestion that there's a different mechanism called Rubo Kakulo, which maybe was what Rashi is getting at. Hi? So I was wondering about that. So on the one hand, the words Bittel Barov do kind of fit better with the more standard Bittel. But on the other hand, we get a little bit from the next words. Harehu Kshub Kamish Eino. That sounds like the Tosfos and Sanhedrin. That works a little bit for the other side, that this minority, it just simply doesn't exist. Now, to take the point a little bit further, as Rabbi Warman notes, if you look in the language of the Ran, and then we'll look back again in a second to see a similar thing in Rashi itself, that the Ran's language, let's first look there. Let's look at the end of the Ran. So the last few words of the Ran, afilu hachi boi miha shehe meitzo. V'kol shechamsu merubu mitzelso ein kan what? Sale. The chayin nearly perish the perushal shal Rashi. Now, what is it you need? Not a question of the schach, the way he's putting it. You need a reality of shade. So, when there's too much sunlight, you don't have the reality of shade. So, what's our question? We're not measuring schach here. And we're not really measuring sunlight either, according to this understanding. We want to know, your schach. Your schach has to be a shaded schach. Is it a shaded schach or not? If it has a majority of sunlight coming in, that is not called a sukkah with shade. If there's a good amount of shade, there's a majority of shade, then it makes the whole sukkah into a sukkah with shade. So we're interested in this one entity, the sukkah. And we want to know, is the sukkah an entity that has shade or not? So the Ran, perhaps, that language supports that. And also the end of the Rashi that we said before sounded a little bit like an add-on. Right? V'al shem haschach kruya sukkah. The sukkah is named because of its schach. So the schach is a source of tzel. And because of the schach, it's called a sukkah. So essentially, to say it simpler, we want to know, is it a sukkah or not? A sukkah is an entity that is shaded, and we want to know, does this qualify? Is it shaded? Abby. Okay. Right. We're talking about if the sukkah is too high, right? The sukkah tietzel, mashma ein schach ela asu v'tzel. Right? So that idea that schach is defined as a shadenizing force, and a sukkah is named after schach. So to simplify the question from a minute ago, we want to know, is it a shaded sukkah? So let's say it with fewer words. Is it a sukkah? So we want to know, if it's an entity that has majority shade coming in, it's a sukkah. If it's an entity that doesn't, it is not a sukkah. And that's essentially what Rashi is saying, that if it's less than 50% shade already, no sukkah. That's not called a sukkah. So another way to phrase the question, kind of in chakira format, as the Warman goes on to put it, is what exactly is the issue here? When we're talking about row this, row that, this percentage, that percentage, what exactly is it that we need? Do we need to have a shear in schach? Like, is it a schach needs to have a certain measurement? And that measurement is 51%? Or no, there's no such thing. It's not about measuring schach. It's just the reality. is there shade or is there not shade? And shade is created when you have 51% of a shaded environment. So what exactly is our concern here when the Mishnah has this din of Shechamsa Merubah Mitzelsa? What is that telling us? Telling us that we need to measure our schach? Or it's not about measuring the schach. It's about the question of, is the sukkah a shaded in sukkah? Yes, sir. In what sense?
Well, meaning, I understand if you want to say that if it's 50% schach, then that's totally fine. It's just a bit of a say the missionaries do the whole thing, which is the implication.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do you understand? Because the shade's certainly not going to get there.
Oh, you're saying, say, if the sukkah is 30 yamas high,
yeah,
right? So you're not going. So the question is whether the walls help. Sorry?
So then how is the Hakir thing?
It's a fair question. I think we have to figure out how much Rabbi Yehuda has to get it from that angle. Let's leave that aside for a second. I understand where you want to get it. Let's leave that aside for a second. But it's according to our halacha. So, which question are we asking? Are we asking how big the schach has to be? Or maybe no, that's not the issue. The issue is this a schach with, is this a sukkah that is an entity of shade or not? So he notes, Rebbe notes this as well, that the Pnei Yeshua asked the question, that if we're so concerned about the impact of rov and bittul, that a majority of air of exposed sky would have been mevatel the schach, if that's what Rashi had meant. So that's the Pnei Yeshua. Why don't we say the same thing by the walls? And that if we have walls where it adds up to more exposed space than covered space, so why don't we say the walls are going to disappear? That'll be a problem. So why don't we say that? So he gives an answer, the Pnei Yeshua, that maybe we're more concerned, we're more machner about the schach, because the schach, that's like Rashi tells us, maybe that's why he says it, that Rashi emphasizes that the sukkah is defined by the schach is much more our concern. So if the schach would disappear, we're very worried about that. But if the walls would halakhically disappear, that doesn't bother us as much. So the woman goes on to note that if the issue was that the schach disappearing by bittul, so okay, so then you could ask such a question, why don't we apply the same svara to the walls? But we see, based on what we're pointing out here, that it's not about the walls. It's not about the schach disappearing. It's about the reality of shade. And if the reality of shade is there, so then it's not that we're concerned that there's some kind of bittul that's happening to the schach. And therefore, the logic doesn't just transfer to walls. It's not the same kind of thing. It's not the same kind of question. That's what it sounds like. You know, like Iran says, there are people out there who understand it that way. But the nature of the question, it sounds like essentially that's what he's assuming is going on. So Rabbi Warman goes on to note that there might be a possible nafkamina. He's not so sure about it. But he says, it's not so mukhraf, but there might be a possible nafkamina. The Gemara in Chesem Midbeis, the Gemara talks about Sukkot Ganbach and the like. And the Gemara says that sukkah mikol makom kshera, right, wherever the sukkah came from is kosher. Ubilvad shetehei mesuchachas kilchasa, as long as it is properly schacht. So Rashi here comments, maya kehilchasa. So maya asla shmimim diilu shetehei tzel samur mechamsa uvadover shekasa lechach shita. Actually, right, that's not the Rashi we need to see. But it's also relevant to the point, but that's not what we want to look at. But that the point is that, sorry, down here, the sukkah has to be l'shem tzel. Sukkah has to be there. Here it is. Sorry. That the sukkah has to be there for the purposes of shade. Below the Sneas Baal Mitz, the Rashi actually Amir of Chista. Even though we don't need the sukkah to be specifically for the sake of yantif, but l'shem sukkah b'inan, it has to be a sukkah for the shame of being a sukkah. V'tseil hu demekari sukkah. So the definition of a sukkah is that it has schach, and therefore it has to be a sukkah in that sense. So he discusses the question because nafkamina is not so mukhrach, and indeed it isn't, but you see it going actually both ways. But the question, if you have a situation where you have your sukkah and the schach is not enough, so do you solve that by just adding on more schach? Or do you say that no, that situation is already defined as a non-sukkah because it's not sale giving, and therefore you have to take it all off and put it back on l'shem sale. But as he points out, even more than he says, it's not really mukhrach because you could say it both ways according to either tzad. But the question is still, broadly speaking, an interesting question. What does it mean, a sukkah l'shem sale, l'shem schach? So is it defined by a certain amount of schach, and the question of adding it up? Or is it just the reality that the sukkah benefits from the shade of the schach? So far, so good? Going and following? So I think you could just add on a little bit more, you know, with each of these points that we've been invoking towards our introduction. So we're trying to also understand, assuming that these opening sugyas give us a little bit to the concept of sukkah, trying to understand what are the philosophical implications of each one of these dinim. So essentially what emerges is we've seen that Rashi on the surface sounds like the issue is schach. You have to have enough schach and not have that schach get overwhelmed and buckled. And the other possible reading, and maybe the thing Yeshua understood in that way, as was just noted, or the other possible reading, that no, it's not about schach, it's about sale. So one could ask a little bit, I guess I'll be hashkafa, what are we looking for? What is the issue? So is the issue sale, or is the issue schach? What is it that we need to have for you? I saw in one sefer I was looking at it last week, quoted all kinds of interesting interpretations about what the message of the sale is. And maybe sale, the whole idea of shade, is there to convey some of the paradoxes of Olam Hazeh, because a shadow is created by the interruption of light. So it looks like it's something, but really it's something because of absence. Because you stood in front of the light, you create a shadow. So when a person's not there, so then you actually have the light, and when the light is interrupted, that's where you have shade. And Olam Haba is the opposite. You know, the idea that it's not like the illusionary nature of this world, that everything is the opposite of what it really is, but is what it really is. So therefore, the impact of tzel is meant to convey a certain message, meant to convey a certain theme about the illusory nature of this world. So if it's something like that, and the Sefer had a few other suggestions as to what exactly is the philosophical message of sale, so then the question could be, we're trying to get sale in our sukkah, we're trying to get shade, and that's what it's about. But you could have said that the more straightforward explanation, perhaps, is that it's not so much about the sale, it's about the schach, that the whole schach is the whole essence of the sukkah, as we've been seeing throughout the Rashi's comments and otherwise. And the reason we care about sale could have been, were it not for this whole problem about reading bittul, could have said the other way around, right? That we want the sukkah to have schach, and the sale is reflective of how much schach we have. And if you're not sitting in a sukkah that has tzel, it means you don't have schach. Now, why should we care so much about schach? Well, if the whole theme of sukkahs is God's protection over us, even when nothing else is clearly physically there, so then the schach itself becomes very important. Schach is the symbol of the sukkahs. It's a symbol both of the Anani HaKavod, perhaps even more so, that which is above, and is the symbol of even the sukkahs mamish. So the symbol of this kind of protection, when everything else is open, is the schach, and maybe that's the theme of our sukkah. So essentially, there seems to be room, both hashkafically and halachically, to ask, what exactly are we interested in? Are we interested in tzel, or are we interested in schach? And if we're interested in schach, it makes a lot of sense, but then we have a technical problem, how to read this Rashi, his invoking of bittul, and that's where we have this whole discussion.
I think practically, how would we practically measure tzel at either at different points during the day, or even at night? Because we're so high, it was at night.
Right.
So how would you measure, you know, what if you build your sukkah, or if your sukkah falls down, how would you build it back up at night? How would you measure tzel?
Right, so it comes out that we're really measuring it by the schach. But the question is, what is the schach really there for? Is it there because it translates into a certain amount of tzel? Or is it that we're interested in the schach itself? And that's ultimately what the Gemara Daf Chav Beis is telling us, that even when it turns out to have 50-50 on the ground, that's okay because it shows that the tzel upstairs is enough, because it shows the schach is enough. So it still all comes out to be measured by the schach. We don't actually measure it by the ground. So we measure it by coverage on top. But the Gemara says that when that statement that 50-50 is okay, 50-50 is okay because it tells us what's really going on the top. Hi.
Why would Rashi say the last part about the schach according to the Ram?
I think according to either way, the schach defines the sukkah. And according
why is that relevant?
Because the whole mitzvah is, it works both ways. Because even if we want to follow it through with our hashkafic interpretation, it still works both ways. Right? Are we interested in schach? So then it's good that Rashi says, Hashem eschach nekru sukkah. But if we're interested in coverage, we're interested in sale, so still the source of that is the schach. So this is the roundabout way of saying that a sukkah is defined by being a shaded environment. It's shaded because of the schach, and therefore I'll shade. So a roundabout way of saying that I'll shade the shade, kari sukkah, and the schach is the stand-in. Again, it seems like no pun intended, whatever. But it's the same idea as the stand-in for the shade. Okay, so let's just recap these points and see how everything fits in. So essentially, we noted that the Mishnah says it has to be tzelsa merub b'chamsa, and not the other way around, chamsa tzelsa. And Rashi has this comment that, yeah, it would be bad if it was that way, because if we drove, we'd be mevatel the miut, and it'd be k'mishaino, and al shem eschach kari sukkah. And the Ran rushes in to say, don't get the impression, sorry, this is the theme so far, the past few minutes, don't get the impression that Rashi is telling you about schach getting bottle, because it's not the correct shot. And he just makes his point by referring to the Gemara later on, where the Gemara says 50-50 is okay, so you see that 50-50 is okay on the ground, so we're looking at the tzel, not the schach. And the Sfasem has made the point that, yeah, you have to say it like that because the schach is nicker. So how could the schach be bittul? And that Rashi himself on Daf Tes says that when bittul does work with the schach from the tree, it's because it's all mixed in and it's not nicker l'ayin. It's not visible. So if that's the case, so then that perhaps could help us understand a few other things. And we noted it by Wardman's explanation that it's not bittul like kosher food, where your tray food gets dissolved into your jar of kosher, but it's rubo kikulo. It's when you have one entity that is defined based on its majority position. And perhaps if we compare it to a Bezdin, where Tosfos and Sanhedrin says that the two dayanim outvote the third is as if he doesn't exist anymore, we don't put any weight on that third individual. And that language, k'mishaino, is shared by Rashi over here also, and perhaps suggests a link between them. It was pointed out that the language of batel berov does exist in the Rashi here. We have to figure out what kind of an impact that has. And this led us all to question, what exactly is our desire? Do we want to have a certain amount of schach, or is it that we want to have a sukkah that is shaded, and shaded is defined by having a majority shade, otherwise simply not called shade? If somebody's walking around outside and he says, I need some shade, he takes a twig and holds it over his head, so he's not going to be considered protected. That it has to reach a certain threshold for you to consider yourself in the shade. So we need to know at what point is that happening. And then he put the question also, is it that this whole measurement here is that we have a shear in schach, has to be a certain degree? Or no, it's not about the schach, it's about the sukkah. We need to know if a sukkah is shaded or not. And to use that note also, the Pnei Yeshua's question, why don't we apply the same math to the walls and worry that the walls will disappear? And the Pnei Yeshua says, well, maybe it's different because the emphasis on schach, but we could say without that, that no, the whole issue is shade, and the walls don't have that same consideration. Then we went to discuss the whole question of why is it that we're interested in this. Are we interested in the shade? Are we interested in the schach? And one could ask, hashkafically, is it that there's a certain message in shade, whether it's about the olam hazeh, olam haba, whatever it is, or is it the schach itself that carries the image with it because of the whole history, and this is what represents the sukkahs of the midbar, and therefore it's really the schach that we're interested in. But that poses a technical question of how to understand the concept of bittul berov here. So to sum up, as our introduction, we're now going to transition, God willing, tomorrow into the halachic sugyas, or the more concrete halachic sugyas. Actually, also maybe a pun as well. We'll see. None of these were intentional, really. But we've seen now three major discussions that emanate from our Mishnah and that affect our whole conceptual understanding of sukkah. First, we talked about the question of building a sukkah, whether that is a mitzvah or not. And then we got into the discussion of Diras Aroi and Diras Keva. And in between that, we got into the discussion of one has to have an awareness that he is in the sukkah, which was also one of the explanations for the sukkah not being, the staff not being too high. And now we got into the discussion of Tzilsim Ruv L'Chamsa, which goes to the very core of Schach. And we put them all together, and we see that there is a concept of living in a sukkah, where building the sukkah is less of the mitzvah focus, although we discussed how the need for preparation and bringing a context to the table is a major theme of the mitzvah, and that once we're in the sukkah, there's a need to be aware of it and to have the mentality and the consciousness of the message of the sukkah, and that that message is one of Yiras Aroi, even though there was another opinion in the Gemara. We talked how that could also be understood within that context. And part of that theme as well is the sale of the sukkah, and that completes the puzzle of what exactly the nature of our experience is meant to be. And we'll now take it from here to the actual practicalities of what it takes to qualify for a valid sukkah experience. Any questions about anything? Yes, sir? So I want to see in light of some of the other Gemaras in terms of just what exactly we do. So we're gonna hold off on that until we see a little bit more about some of the discussions. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Can you combine the saying that the slot is bigger versus the shade, say that the shade provided through the slot?
Yeah, so you definitely can. Clearly there's a relationship. Right. The question is just
not
other than that, right. The question where if we want to look at it, I'll be the philosophy and I'll be the hashkafen, and so what's giving us that? Is it the shade, or is it specifically the physical object that's there causing the shade, or is there some combination of the two? You know, if the halacha is putting an emphasis on one side over the other, so it helps push us in one direction to try to understand what is most compatible with the theme. So it just helps us to try to explore a little bit what exactly is the message here. Hi.
Would this book here also have an impact on having certain amounts of staff that are possible? Knowing that staff that is properly shaded,
mm-hmm.
You have certain areas which are, I don't know.
Oh, so how do the factors, how do the percentage of how much schach pasul and how much schach kosher, since you could have a reality of shade, right, so why should it bother us how much of that is good or not? It's a very important question. That's one of the major things we need to get into. How exactly does good schach and bad schach relate to each other, especially because they both end up giving a shade. Okay, questions? All right, so then I guess we'll stop here. Wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things. Tomorrow is Tuesday's schedule.
I thought so.